And now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the
clock. Oh, someone forgot to take the automation off from last week. Shall we start again?
And now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Shout Out, the real one. We're here. We are live. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Tara Fraser. On today's show, Ez talks to Nadia about singing, writing and being queer.
Plus, Lucy chats to Keski. I think that's how you pronounce it. Keski? Something like that. Anyway, they'll say it later, I promise. And Holly from Fag Packet.
That's amazing, isn't it? What a name.
Oh, today, right here on Shout Out. After me, you're a very, very naughty girl.
We got to promise everyone that we're live now, so
here we are,
I'm going to punch you in the arm.
Ow!
Okay, yeah, you're alive.
I'm in the middle of this.
So now, can I apologise as well for last week as well? The show was not the best quality last week. It turned out after pre-recording it the day before that there was issues with the sound recording, so it might have sounded a bit distorted and the like. So, but we're back in studio one this week,
and I've just sorted it.
And you've just sorted it, have
yes.
You? Okay, cool.
You promise?
Well, I tested it, and it was okay. So,
yeah, in case you want it, we're experimenting with pre-recording on like a night before or something, because sometimes guests can't always make a Thursday. So, if we can make a Wednesday too. It means that it opens up so more of you can come and join us and say hello.
But it will still go out at the same time.
Yeah, it's still go. Yeah, yeah. The show will still go out at the same time. So if you're listening on BCFM, it's now. It's live. It's 8 o'clock on a Thursday.
I think you're spoofing people. We're not really live. I think
how do we prove
we're on
that
a
we're
parallel
not live?
Universe?
I don't know if you can actually prove it, because if this is all a ruse, then we would just have had things prepared. Like, have you had a really nice Thursday?
Hang on, we got cameras.
Yeah.
That are live streaming.
But the listeners can't hear the cameras.
But we could get something like that was in the news today, couldn't you?
The King visited the United States.
That was Wednesday. It's not Wednesday. It's Thursday, Stephanie.
It's all the falling today.
I promise you we are live. We're in Studio One with our lovely blue microphones.
Yeah, trust Andy, he's a radio presenter.
Yes. So,
is that the new slogan? Trust me, I'm a doctor. Trust Andy, he's a radio presenter.
There's t-shirts with that on it.
Is there?
Yes.
Wow. What, with just like a zoom in photo of Andy's face?
Hang on, you're on the radio more than me.
Yeah.
I mean, my airtime a week is 1 hour.
Do you know, when we're abroad...
Yours is like 45.
Yeah.
Wow.
When we're abroad and we've done pre-record, Steph makes me listen to her show in the car.
Yeah,
to
be fair, I do that to Carl.
Oh, do you? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
We got to listen to it. The music's cracking.
It is. It is pretty good.
We pay Guest of the Year when you do the music.
Yeah.
1940 what?
Decade.
Excuse me. The Monday show is supposed to be oldies. Isn't that right, Terry?
It is. No, I'm on about our show.
Terry is my listener.
Everyone's like, what was that song? When did that come out? I'm sure I've heard a remix of that from 30 years ago.
My granny knew that one well.
Oh.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Oh, that was on Poirot that I watched last night.
I'm going to look in my book now for haggis jokes.
Do you think they'll replace us with AI, though? Do you think that there will be automated shout-outs?
We're too good.
Yeah.
We meaning me.
There is up in Scotland, actually, a radio station going to launch, which is partially human and partially AI presenters. So during the day, you're going to have artificial presenters.
I don't like
it. It's a first.
No, thanks.
So, we're
how do they do a Scottish accent with the AI? Come on now. I mean, that's just...
We're lucky we get an English one. Most of them are American.
That's very true, actually.
We'll spot it a mile off.
Anyway, should we move on to our first feature, Nadia?
Yes. I had the pleasure of speaking with the amazing Nadia about their new EP, Love Me Sick, and their upcoming tour. And they are in Bristol on the 5th of May at Rough Trade. So enjoy this interview with a very talented individual. We have the pleasure of being
joined by Nadia, who is quite an incredible singer and songwriter and has just come off a rather amazing tour and is going into their own tour. So, Nadia, welcome to Shout Out.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yay. It's absolutely our pleasure. So before we get into what you're doing right now, what you've just been doing as well, because it sounds and looks like it's been an amazing time, can we just sort of get to know a bit about you? How did you get to this point? What got you into music?
First of all, thank you. You've said a lot of lovely things and I really appreciate that. With music, honestly, I kind of wish that I had a background that was full of the Beatles growing up, or like music being played throughout the house, but it was actually kind of a weirdly quiet house, so I had a lot of time to play and kind of make up melodies and write and journal. So I'd spent a lot of time as a kid just like talking to people but also humming under my breath like constantly, and that followed me all the way through moving like from Cairo to Manchester. And then I remember figuring out that you could do a lot of the music yourself, DIY, through this like thing with Levi's Project and like Levi's Jeans, but they were doing some music stuff with everything, and that just changed everything for me. I was like 17 with a dream, and suddenly there were like tools around me to try and make that happen. So it was around then that I started making my own music.
That sounds like that must have been, yeah, truly amazing for you to suddenly have those things accessible and to not have had them before, but to have had that passion. What was that like at 17 moving forward? What sort of things did you begin creating?
Honestly, it was brilliant. I think access to the arts is just so important, especially because I know that growing up in Hume and stuff, we didn't have massive resources to like private lessons for certain like instruments or anything like that. So yeah, it was amazing to be able to, after years of just like recording stuff in my bedroom, like for YouTube, that thankfully have all been privated. I'm so grateful. So, I think it's just been incredible to, it was incredible to be able to suddenly talk to other people who knew what they were, definitely knew more than me and knew what they were doing when it came to being an independent artist releasing. And it was just kind of like a whole world that, you know, you just don't know stuff so you know. It's like how I'd been paying someone to change my guitar strings and then I learned how to do it and I was like, dumb idiot, why didn't you just watch a tutorial? Like, you just don't understand how close you are to the things that you want, I think, unless sometimes there's someone there nudging you towards doing it yourself.
I'm so glad that that was available and that is what sort of started you being able to get to this point. Do you have any musicians or any music that has inspired you, and has that changed over the years?
Oh, loads. I mean, Marina was huge for me. I love Marina still. Paramore, I think the My Chemical Romance aspect of like obviously all the angst, but I think a lot of queer people kind of jumped on Jared Way's like expression of femininity despite seemingly kind of being like this cis straight guy, like him wearing a skirt, him being unafraid to wear makeup and everything and make it so rock and roll. I think Stromae as well, with the Tous Les Mêmes music video where he's like literally half like feminine, half masculine, it was something that like made my little non-binary brain just go, oh my god, this exists. I didn't realize you could be both. This is nuts. And it just, you know, it just makes it a huge pile on of all the ways you can be creative in yourself.
Absolutely. And their fluidity and their I don't care attitude, this is what I want to wear, I feel great in this. And I think it really was quite powerful for queer kids to see people like Jared Way, you know, back in the 70s, 80s, 90s. Of course, we had Bowie as an example. And then young kids needed that stuff too, right, in the noughties.
Literally. Honestly, I only discovered Bowie and like Prince mostly in my late teens, which sucks. I was mourning this huge amount of time that I could have spent analyzing everything, but thankfully it's fine. I've watched so many videos, I've consumed so much media, I'm just so disappointed that I didn't get to see them more.
So the journey, because I don't know your age and you don't have to tell me, what was the journey from 17 to this moment? I'm going to guess a few years have passed since then.
Oh, definitely. I'm 25 now.
25, so. Okay.
It's been a long time. I feel like a different person. Everything around me is different, you know. my surroundings, sometimes like the people in my life, even my relationships look different now. So it's been a time.
Has it been a good time?
Sometimes, yeah. But like not always, obviously.
of course, not always. But it's a big thing to reflect, isn't it? Because, you know, that what's that, 5, 7, 8, it's, I can't do maths, 5, 6, 7, 8 years-ish, you know, a lot can happen just in a few months. And I would imagine, especially in the creative industry, and more recently, you've been on tour with a certain somebody. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I was on tour with a really close friend of mine, Kat Burns. It was so lovely. Like, we just smashed out 8 shows in like 10 days, and it was as intense as that sounds, but it was super fun. Like, I'd never, my second ever support tour, and I got to do it with someone that I love so dearly and I'm so inspired by, so I was just like, this is rock and roll.
Kat has amazing energy. Did you perform together, or did you perform first and then Kat came on afterwards?
I was the support act. She just messaged me around, I don't know, late last year, and just was like, please come join me for tour. And I was like, didn't even have to ask. It's crazy. I've already confirmed it with everyone I can talk to. But yeah, it was brilliant.
Did you just say 8 gigs in 10 days?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was.
That's very rock and roll.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we were like, we definitely, whew, there was no, it was so good. Cause like at the end of the day, we'd just play FIFA on the bus or like have some random deep convo on like, while doing a surprise birthday party for one of the people on the team. Like, it was just silly, but we fit so many wonderful moments in there. But we were very tired by the end. I was so tired.
I bet brutal. You were. Do you have any gigs that stood out to you in that tour?
I mean, I hadn't ever like played in places like Newcastle before, Bournemouth, so I hadn't seen these cities, and I was just like, this is kind of crazy. But Bristol was great, because the last time I was there, I'd opened for Seb Lowe on the Thekla for like, it was like years ago, right? And I felt like a completely different person, but I remember it being a gig that I was so proud of. And a huge part of my aversion for Bristol in general is because, like, I think my first ever like lesbian breakup was with an ex from Bristol, so I was just like, I can't come back, it's different, you know, I can't walk these streets, it's not the same. But then after going back and playing opening for Kat, it was just really fun, and I had a gay old time, what can I say.
Was it less anxiety inducing being back in Bristol than you thought then?
Oh, massively less, thank God. I was just like, is there any malicious energy here? And no, everyone was genuinely maybe the nicest person I'd met. It was wonderful. Like, just a huge community of really sweet people. I enjoyed it. I was walking around. I visited Rough Trade. Like, it was just a nice atmosphere.
I think Bristol has got quite an amazingly loving queer energy within it, and creative energy that also is sort of very wholesome and welcoming for queer people. Safe spaces, I guess, is what I'm trying to say there. And I see that a lot when I go to gigs. You know, I feel very safe in those spaces.
Literally, and there's an appreciation, I think, for art all around in Bristol. Like, when I got the opportunity to walk through some of the markets and see all the different kind of things, like, I'm such a advocate for trinkets and knickknacks and just stuff, you know, maximalism all the way, that I just really loved how much independent and local art there was, as well as the music.
Absolutely. Did you get any trinkets?
I actually got a little, it was like a bone drawing or something. It was some anatomy thing and a ring and, yeah. Oh, some books as well. But yeah, I got plenty of things, but I always do. I just like things, you know.
It's dangerous, the St. Nick's Market Street, because mm-hmm. of course you've got St. Nick's Market with the amazing food as well and all those unique stalls. And I mean, it goes from sort of dinosaur bones to jewellery to amazing clothing, doesn't it? And then you walk down the street and there's bookshops like everywhere.
Yeah. And there's all these like buildings, maybe it's an alleyway and maybe it's a building. And I'm like, oh my God. But also there's just shop sellers on every single step. It's so wonderful, but I do definitely like, oh God, I had to close my eyes at one point. I just couldn't look around anymore.
Is that experience that you've just had what's bringing you back to Bristol for your tour?
I think I just want to connect with the community there that I know. I just really appreciate, and the day during the show and stuff, I did a meetup and like met some people, and it was so lovely how like even people who hadn't known about the meetup had stumbled upon me and were saying hi and like did all that. So I just realized that I haven't really visited that region, and I've never headlined there. So I was just like, hey, after last year of running around the country and doing all that, it would be so nice to go a little closer to all the people that I know travel so often to bigger cities and stuff just to come to a gig.
Yeah, totally. And okay, well, thinking of gigs and your gigs, what is coming up for you? I know that you've got your EP that's been released very recently, actually. Could you tell the listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's four songs. I had obviously a gay breakup, duh. And I sat there and I was really cool about it, and I definitely didn't wallow and write a four-track EP about all the different stages of things I experienced as a result. But I think it's called Love Music. I'll be playing it in like a bunch more songs on the 3rd of May at Rough Trade. But it's just like the whole... the lack of conversation before a breakup, where it's kind of this impending thing and you know it, but also the like wanting to self-sabotage and having a lot of fun and like doing all that stuff to try and prove the person right about how terrible of a person you are, but also just like really yearning for that care and like obsession back. So it's a real mix of literally everything I could have possibly felt during the breakup, but it was super fun and super cathartic, and I'm very very grateful it exists.
Sounds like a very cathartic experience for you, and I think it sounds like it's been a useful way for you to maybe process that time in your life. And I think that's what a lot of fans resonate with, and why they fall in love with the music that artists bring out.
It's always a comfort when people reach out and tell me their own stories. I'm always just like, because inbuilt in like the shows and stuff, we always do a meetup before, like there's at least time so that I can at least talk to people, because the whole point of this community is that they're not just connecting with me but connecting with each other, because I know how incredible they all are, and it's like it's genuinely such a joy and such an honor to like see people connecting and becoming friends, or being like, hey, I met X person, or I came on my own and I then like met some friends and all that stuff, and knowing that it's a safe space for people to hopefully just like connect with other people. But yeah, it's just incredibly fun to get that in return, that vulnerability, when they tell me exactly what resonated and how, and whether it was what I expected or not.
Amazing. We are incredibly coming towards the end of a really lovely interview with you, Nadia. So please tell us, how can we come see you? What's the date? What's your details online, your Instagram and your website address, so that people who are listening can have a look and hopefully come to see you live?
Well, first of all, thank you so much. I've had such a lovely time and chat. Everywhere it's NXDIA Music, because why not spell it? So swaggy. I'm kidding. It was a username available to me at the time, and it stuck, which I love. Check out my new EP, Love Me Sick. If you're around Bristol, Manchester and London, I'm pretty sure have sold out, but Bristol, 5th of May, Rough Trade, there's still some tickets available. Please come through. I'd love to see you and say hello and sing with you.
Thank you so much, Nadia. It's been a real joy, and good luck. Have the most amazing time on the tour. I know that the people that are going to come see you are going to have a really wonderful evening.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Bit of a summer one, that, for you. I told you remember the original, didn't I?
Loved it. Yeah. I'd be quite worried if I didn't know Like a Prayer. I got beaten at a talent competition by this local school bully with her singing that, so I've had to heal to be able to love it again.
That's not the same version. That's quite recent.
No, this was in the 90s.
Yeah, this is by Josh Fowers.
I like it. It's really good.
It's called Like a Prayer.
Yeah.
So, I've got another modern. It came out a few years ago, but it is a modern version of an old classic.
There's nothing new. I'm like a modern version of an old classic. Not looking at Steph.
Is that what you're calling Steph these days? Is it? You're an old classic.
Oh, the raised eyebrow. That's it. You've lost it now.
So, I'm not getting any level off you, Terry.
Hello.
Yeah, I didn't think I was.
Terry Starr, the radio superstar.
Oh, were the CDs selected?
No, I don't think so.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6
No, no. It's just you don't appear to be there. So you can you do me a favour?
Yes,
and move the mic
listeners, we're just shuffling the mics. Bear with. So, I think
that was
Mike's what?
Oh, good lord! That one's working. Hello,
that
Terry.
Was smooth.
So, can we get some news headlines?
Sure.
This is Shoutout News, 30th of April. Welcome along.
A 51-year-old man has been arrested on suspicion of arson with intent to endanger life following a fire at a busy LGBT plus nightclub in Milton Keynes. Revelers were evacuated from Pink Punters on Watling Street in Fenny Stratford in the early hours of Sunday as flames spread rapidly through the venue. Thames Valley Police confirmed that the man, who is from Milton Keynes, remains in custody and has urged the public not to speculate about any possible motive. No injuries have been reported. Eyewitness Molly Furman said staff and security began shouting for everyone to leave without warning. She described the moment as intense, adding that the fire wasn't small and expanded rapidly. Frank McMahon, whose family has owned Pink Punters for 36 years, said that he was heartbroken but deeply relieved that everyone got out safely. He praised staff, customers and fire crews for their quick actions and said that Pink Punters, which he described as being about people, not bricks, will be back.
A crowdfunding campaign for a gay father arrested following a violent altercation triggered by a homophobic street interview has raised more than $170,000 towards legal costs. David Vullen faces a felony charge after he and his husband Anthony were approached for what they believed was a legitimate interview while walking with their baby in West Hollywood. Video footage posted online shows a right-wing influencer asking hostile and deeply offensive questions about same-sex parenting. The couple strongly dispute an allegation of felony vandalism relating to camera equipment, while supporters say the fundraising response reflects widespread concern about harassment being disguised as journalism.
The UK's national LGBTQIA plus asylum-seeking organisation, Rainbow Migration, has renewed calls for supporters to contact their MPs, urging an end to the detention of asylum seekers, including vulnerable LGBTQIA plus people, and the introduction of a 28-day time limit on all immigration detention. The charity says detention is often indefinite, isolates people from support networks, and re-traumatises those who have fled persecution. Rainbow Migration argues that community-based alternatives are both more humane and more effective. More information is available at rainbowmigration.org.uk. No pride in detention.
In Westminster, a significant legal change affecting LGBTQ plus people has now come into force. New legislation equalises sentencing for anti-LGBT plus hate crimes, bringing them into line with offences motivated by race or religion. Advocacy groups including Stonewall and Gallup have welcomed the change, describing it as the first major LGBTQI plus rights legislation in more than a decade and an important step towards ending what campaigners have called a hierarchy of hate.
Across the UK, Lesbian Visibility Week has just wrapped up, running from the 20th to the 26th of April and culminating in Lesbian Visibility Day. This year's focus has been on health and healing, with organisers saying the week continues to grow in reach and importance. Events range from community meetups to panel discussions and comedy shows, with renewed emphasis on intersectional visibility, which includes the butch, femme, trans and non-binary lesbians.
The UK's largest pride organisation is facing continuing scrutiny following the dismissal of its chief executive earlier this month. Staff and volunteers have raised concerns about workplace culture, governance and safeguarding, while the board has not yet commented publicly. In a related legal development, the former CEO has admitted contempt of court after failing to return organisational login details and documents and is due to be sentenced at a later date. The situation has reignited calls for transparency and accountability within national pride bodies.
In Northern Ireland, a DUP councillor has been suspended for 3 months following remarks that linked the LGBTQIA plus community with support for Hamas. A standards watchdog rules that the comments breached the councillor's code of conduct, and equality groups warned that rhetoric of this kind simply fuels hostility and increases risk for queer communities across the region.
And on family rights, a same-sex couple appearing on This Morning This Week have spoken out about the UK's surrogacy laws. After having their baby through surrogacy in the United States, they described how current UK laws leaves intended parents without automatic legal recognition from birth. Campaigners say the case highlights long-standing gaps in legislation and are calling for urgent reform to ensure children and LGBTQI plus families are legally protected from day one.
In London, Hampstead Heath bathing ponds remains a live issue. A governing body has recommended maintaining the current access arrangements following a large public consultation, which showed strong support for the existing policy. The decision has been welcomed by trans-inclusive community groups, whilst legal challenges and the wider debate continue.
Local low-cost therapy service Talk to the Rainbow received the Work Placement Provider of the Year award last week at the University Centre Western Awards 2026. The award recognises the quality of the organisation's placement provision and the support it offers to students. Talk to the Rainbow provides affordable LGBTQIA plus affirming therapy while offering ethical and supportive training placements, and said it was delighted to receive the recognition.
Some uplifting cultural news from Birmingham. A new production of A Midsummer Night's Dream at the Birmingham Rep has been reimagined as a modern queer Brummy love story featuring local accents, music and a gender-swapped romance. The production has been praised for its humour, its unapologetically queer framing and for making Shakespeare feel accessible to new audiences. A reminder of how regional theatre continues to push representation forward.
Sounds wonderful. And finally, LGBTQIA+ pagans, new ages and those who mark the turning of the seasons will be celebrating this weekend as we arrive at Beltane or Calamai in Wales. An ancient festival that predates Christianity in Britain and Ireland, Beltane marks renewal, the height of spring and the movement toward the longest days of the year. May Day also carries a long history of workers' movements and collective action. Here in the UK, it's a bank holiday weekend, so if you're heading out, check local listings, look after one another and please take care with drink and drugs.
From all of us at Shout Out News, have a happy and safe bank holiday.
This has been Ezra Peregrine
and Terry Starr.
Shout Out News,
national and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shout Out Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shout Out,
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
I am joined by Holly Wilson-Guy and Chesky Cobbler, and they are the creators and performers in Dyke Systems Limited. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Please, Holly, could you like tell us about the show and what audiences could expect?
Yeah, sure. So the show Dyke Systems Limited is a, as we like to call it, a queer fever dream slash suburban nightmare. So it's quite a fun, campy show about two suburban women who have come from the brilliant country of America, or they've come from the USA over to as they would call it, United Britain. In order to sell the Dynamic Young Knowledgeable Entrepreneur program. It's a show that's sort of around a queer love story. It's around sort of satiring capitalist greed and sort of conforming femininity. And it's really a story between Susan and Sally, who are the two lead characters, and how they deliver their business seminar on becoming a dynamic, young, knowledgeable entrepreneur, and also maybe learning across the way what that word really means to them.
And am I right? It's kind of delivered in the form of a seminar, maybe with a little bit of audience interaction. Is that correct?
Yes, that is definitely correct. So you attend the seminar as one of our potential punters. We are trying to recruit you into the program as you come along. So yeah, there's a little bit of audience interaction, not too much to put anybody off, but just enough to make sure that you're really involved in the show. You are the audience watching the show, but you are also the audience as part of that live seminar. So it's quite a fun experience to see a sort of the seminar unfold as the story sort of goes across the hour.
Seeing as you've actually performed this quite a few times now, have any of the audience reactions or engagements actually really surprised you?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, what's really nice is that all of the audience are really up for it. I think that's what always has been a really good surprise, is making sure that the audience actually really want to be involved. I think as the show progresses, I don't want to give any spoilers, but things sort of come off the rails a little bit. And what I always find interesting is when the audience get really shocked by some of the way that we talk to each other or some of that story that comes out. And so some of their reactions to bits that they're not necessarily asked to react to is always fun to see, because you're like, oh, you've been listening to the story and you're reacting in real time to what they're saying to each other.
That must be really great when you know that it's really connecting like that.
Yeah, it's really nice if you hear like a ooh, or like a whoa, you know, that kind of like gasp in the audience when someone says something feels like, oh yeah, we're doing the right thing.
Fantastic. Now, Chesky, it's been described as part business seminar, part cabaret, part suburban nightmare. Does any of it feel more or less like satire now than when you first made it?
So one of the big kind of starting blocks for us was kind of exploring multi-level marketing and pyramid schemes and scammy business models. And like, we looked at the history of these models, and that's kind of why the show is placed in the 90s, just before the rise, like early 90s, before the kind of widespread use of the internet. And I think something that's interesting about the show to a contemporary audience is because of like how onlineness and social media has rebranded multi-level marketing, and how there is so many kind of exploitative business models that have been completely repurposed, that you can work for yourself from home, you can kind of get rich quick. And I think it kind of comes from, so like modern day audiences, people, even if you've like gone to uni and you've trained for something, it doesn't necessarily mean you'll be able to get that job. People feel really like it's not possible to kind of get the job that they're like trained in or really want or want to learn in. And I think that kind of scammy business models really exploit that one, because people are quite vulnerable to it. So it is kind of continuously surprising and spooky how those exploitative business models come up and are still so popular.
I'm just thinking of also the time when businesses realized they could make money out of queer people by branding stuff with rainbows. Mm-hmm. It's just something that comes to mind. Holly, is that, does that kind of surface?
I think it's interesting in our show because I think the queerness feels quite repressed, at least initially in the show. I think that's the other part of what we're trying to explore here, is that sort of repressed identity and that need for that identity to come out no matter what happens. But I think it is also interesting when you think about the wider use of sort of queer people within sort of capitalist structures, and how, first of all, we're made to conform, or it's you, or we're used in a way that can help a business, but then when that business has had that use for you, yeah, it's sort of that's dropped. And I think that's just an interesting side thing that happens within the sort of society that I think is interesting, whether it's like a direct part of the show or not. I think it's still an interesting thing about how queer people are exploited or utilized when it suits wider capitalist and or like sort of heteronormative structures, and then are not when there's no use for it. And I think also that leading to that interesting part that Chesky was saying about multi-level marketing schemes and pyramid schemes, like from that sort of early 80s and 90s and earlier, like with companies like Avon, they were mainly targeting women as well initially, because to support that sort of business structure, because it was like, we can make money from this marginalized community at that time, you know. And so I think it's just that sort of structure that continues to happen to marginalized communities as we sort of go through history, really.
Just to pick up on, I think Holly covered it, but just that how we were kind of really interested about like how women seek to gain power over others in a system that is oppressive. And it kind of also fits within like our queer identity as well, about how we wield power when you don't feel like you have much. And some people kind of forego that and they're like, this is not kind of an ethical right thing to do, but some people do wield it. And it's like a really fascinating space within like contemporary feminism of being like, choice feminism, I'm allowed to do this, even though it can cause harm to others. And it's like an interesting, it was a really interesting thing to play and explore with.
That's awesome. You guys, you actually debuted this, well, you actually debuted it at the Edinburgh Fringe last year, didn't you?
Yeah.
And but you've been touring it since. So tell me, how has the experience touring it differed from performing at the Fringe? Holly?
Yeah, I think it's been really interesting. So performing at the Fringe was a very interesting and whirlwind experience, to be honest. So you're performing it every day for 30 days. I think we did like 28 shows in total. So it's like a pretty much non-stop. And I think we found it really interesting, the sort of variance in audience that would attend that show. So initially we came there and weren't very well known. We were a very new company, a brand new company with our debut show. So we were really trying to get audiences in to see it. And obviously we wanted to have queer audiences in there, because obviously the show is a queer show. And initially it was like trying to find people to get in. As we then started to get a bit more of an people were liking the show and was getting good reviews, the audiences shifted and changed in a way that was sometimes good and sometimes not so good, because actually it meant that you had people coming in not necessarily understanding or reading what the show was about, but realizing that it had a 5-star review, so wanted to come and see that. So it was interesting to see how the audiences shifted within Edinburgh itself, from queer audiences but to that wider more mainstream audience because of the the reviews that it had got. And then I think we're just starting our tour now, so we've done a couple of shows. We did one in Belfast in November, which was fantastic. It was part of a queer arts festival there called Outburst, and I think it was an amazing experience for us actually to take it outside of Edinburgh and to redo the show again. And I think what was really nice is taking the show to a regional audience who were so appreciative of having their stories told on stage. And I think it was a really like fun experience, but also really emotional for us to see that that's how that story is taken by different people and different audiences who maybe don't have as much access to queer art in the same way that potentially some of the larger cities do, or that Edinburgh had a large sort of queer art scene at the time, because obviously lots of shows are going on there. So it felt like a really special experience. And so I think that's why we're really excited to take this again across the UK and to those audiences that do and also don't have access to their story being told in a regular forum.
Yeah, that really resonates. As somebody who did not grow up in a big city and grew up in a small town and didn't really see or understand what queer culture could be, yeah, it's really great that you are getting to tour. And did that sort of drive your choice of venues when touring?
I think we were really lucky because we have an amazing producer who had really good connections with venues. We wanted to take it to as much of the UK as we could. So it was really a kind of a bit of a who had come and seen the show and were able to program it. We also were able to sort of talk to venues around specific places that do either queer and or alternative sort of art performance. So like there's Colchester, for example, that we're going to, has a sort of Weird Wednesdays program in which they sort of platform queer artists and or like comedy as well, like the Exeter Comedy Festival and things like that. So we were able to sort of have a mixture of, oh, we want to go to this town because this might be really great to have a queer performance in. And this is also a great part of a great program to be involved in because they are already platforming other queer artists.
Awesome. And so Chesky, bringing it to Bristol, which is one of those places that's got the strong queer arts scene, what do you think the role of the show is in Bristol and at the Old Vic? It's got the longest run of the tour. How do you think it fits in with what we see and do here?
So I think to what Holly said, we're like so excited to go everywhere. But Bristol is definitely one of the big ones. It's like outside of our home, as you mentioned, it's like the longest run that we're doing on our tour outside of London. but I think we are really excited to go to different places, because where there's really like established queer scenes, like we're going to Brighton and we're in London, we're going to Bristol, we're going to Manchester, but then also seeing how that like translates into the smaller towns as well. And even if it's like, because it is a show that is made by queer people, it's a completely queer creative team, but it is also for everyone. It is a comedy show, it is a show about a love story, unconventional love story, which lots of people can relate to. But also it is a nice idea that even if there's just like a handful of like dykes and queers who come to the show, they'll really enjoy it. But I think that we are really excited to be in a, well, yeah, we're excited to go to Bristol because it feels like it's already really resonating with the audiences. We were so surprised to see how well it sold, as we both, as a, again, as a new company. So yeah, we just can't wait.
That's amazing. Holly and Chesky, thank you so much for talking to me. It's been an absolute pleasure. Dyke Systems Limited is playing at the Bristol Old Vic from the 5th to the 9th of May, and you can get the tickets through the website. But it's also coming back to the West Country in June, and it's going to be at the Exeter Comedy Festival on the 5th of June, and it's going to be at the Phoenix Theatre in Exeter. For Shout Out Radio, this has been Lucy Potter.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That's good. I Run, funnily enough. Could you tell?
No.
It's by Haven.
But like UK it. Garage there, isn't it? Going out. The taste of the millennium about it.
Steph's quiet because I've been feeding her Mentos, listeners.
They're really nice.
They are, yeah. I was trying to swallow mine before we went back on air. Tara did not like.
I think she liked it. It just tried to
kill me.
Didn't the actress say that to the bishop?
What, I liked it, but it tried to kill me?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Yeah. What a lovely selection of interviews this evening.
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, really enjoyed listening to me.
Thank you to Lucy for that one.
Andy missed that.
I did. What did you say?
I said I really loved listening to me.
I'm sorry.
Oh, right, okay. So, listeners, this is now the Ezra R. show. I can't do it as well.
So he put you on the spot.
I know. And I'm sure I could think of something to talk about for
6 months.
Yeah.
Well, you do it off air.
What was I even talking about? I screamed into my phone for 1 minute.
Sorry, yes, yes.
That's all right.
Yeah, that was my fault. Ez had a nice introduction to that one, and I just went straight into it.
Cause you did.
The lovely Lucy intros it.
So I've thrown a few chairs around. I've done some box breathing. So. Nobody would ever know.
No. I had a Mentos and calmed down.
Mentos.
Is it Mentos?
I mean, we can call it Mentos if you want. My brain just went to Mentos.
Your brain went to very dirty places then.
No, it didn't. It went Mentos, Mentos, Domestos, Dementos. I couldn't say it, so I tried to say it. Don't worry. Okay. Don't look at me.
Okay. Can someone take
Domestos, Domestos.
Can someone take the packet away from
she's
her?
Had too much sugar. Sugar high.
I knew what I meant. They're vegan now as well.
She's going to crash out.
Well,
I know.
Anyway, we went and saw Mad Fabulous last week, didn't we? We got a special show coming up on it in a few weeks' time. It's coming out in cinemas in June. Big thank you to the Irish Film Festival for inviting us along. It was lovely.
It was lovely.
What's it about?
Really, really nice. It's based on a true story about the 5th Earl of Anglesey, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who basically turns up because he's, long story short, it's a little bit longer than this, a real thing, but he goes back to his ancestral home, having never actually met his dad. His dad's basically on death's door, and he inherits the whole estate. But I'll set, because this is literally like one of the opening scenes. He gets off the boat that's ferrying him back to his home.
Anglesey.
Wearing a dress and pearls and literally he's the most flamboyant.
Fabulous.
Vyquis.
When you think about the time it's set in as well.
No, Marquis.
You
know?
Everyone else is everyone else in the scenery is.
Yes.
Very plain.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And if you think the era is kind of like, if you know Bridgerton, it's that same kind of era. It's set in, but obviously it's Anglesey. And everything is all about status and the ton. Not that the ton's actually mentioned in the film, but it is, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
And in comes this flamboyant guy who we don't know for definite is gay, but it is assumed. But in real life, what actually happened was after he passed away, his family burnt all of his diaries.
Like they tried to do about Anne Lister.
Yeah. To try and hide the whole thing up. So no one knows for definite. It was probably written in a diary, but he never actually says.
Amazing.
He died at 29.
He was 29 years old. Yeah, he died of
consumption,
which we call tuberculosis these days.
Anglesey's not the best place for consumption, let's be honest.
No, you are in the middle of nowhere. But also back then, they didn't have a cure either, to my knowledge.
You need to be in a dry environment for it to be TB to get over it. Yeah. So, yeah, they're generally east coast of the UK, not the west coast.
Anyway, it is well worth a watch. It's the first time the Irish Film Festival has managed to screen, got the opportunity to screen a main feature film.
Okay.
And between myself and Ez, we've got a very special show coming up. You're going to do a queerstory.
I am.
And talk about the real actual history of what happened. And then I very kindly got an interview with the writer of the show, who I talked to about some of the things that they had to change just for, you know, artistic license in the film. Like he actually goes to the island when he's a lot younger than it's portrayed in the film. But for brevity, they kind of sped a few things up. So well worth a watch. It's out on the 5th of June in cinemas. Brilliant. Nationwide.
And so my quiz story will probably be the week before that, listeners.
It will, yes, along with the interview. We will have a mad, fabulous shout-out.
Oh, he's giving, visually, because I haven't seen it, but visually he's giving Billy Porter energy. Do you know the amazing queer actor Billy Porter?
Yes, very similar, yes, but dress is a lot more old-fashioned, I would say.
Of its time.
If you go onto Wikipedia and look up the fifth Marquis of Anglesey, you'll actually see photos.
Yeah, and that was the reason for the film.
That was
the photographs.
Yes, they stumbled over them. It's Callum Scott-Lee plays the lead, who you might know from It's a Sin.
Yeah,
he played the young innocent one in that.
He's got Welsh accent.
We
were watching the whole thing, and it was like he's got that English vibe, posh English accent, and then when he's interviewed, it's like proper Welsh.
Oh, lovely Welsh accent.
Lovely Welsh accent.
But what was amazing was the film was made in Wales. Everyone that we worked on as well, almost well. It was just like a whole.
There was even a descendant from the family in the film.
Yeah, and she had the other line. I can't remember what the line was now.
No, I can't. But it was quite funny, wasn't it?
Amazing.
She was running out with the jewels. It's mine.
Oh yes, yeah. So she was like quite literally, it was mine.
Very
it was
my
that was it.
That's brilliant. So, I see what they did there.
Yeah, but
it sounds very clever. It is very good.
Creative. It's got lots of funny bits in it. It's got some very creative bits. It's got some sad bits, and it's very much.
I love the butler.
It tells the story of a part of LGBT history that's kind of been forgotten about, so it's nice to bring it back. The butler's played by...
Right, bear with
me. We're bad, aren't we?
I knew it.
What's the name of the film? Quick.
It's called Mad Fabulous. He played the lead in St. Trinity.
Yeah.
St. Trinians. Rupert Everett?
Yeah, that's it.
He was amazing.
He was brilliant in it.
He was like there all the time, but not overpowering. And it was just like such an amazing portrayal of how that time would, how people in the background would actually run things.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah, really good. Really good. So, but you'll get a lot more from us on the Irish Film Festival this year. They're celebrating 20 years, believe it or not. So hopefully later this year we're going to be covering quite a lot of it in the run-up to the film festival and the festival itself, which is around about October type.
You're
going to
camp out. Camp out. You better camp out.
So, and of course we've got Pride before then too. But for this show though, that's it, I'm afraid. If you have an event or a story, or perhaps you'd like to even get involved and join us here on the radio, do get in touch. You can find out all about us online.
All the shows are available in podcasts on all good services, as well as website shoutout.lgbt.
No, shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Oh, I know, but
you'll find
you've only been doing this 10 years.
It's every time.
From myself, from Terry, from Ayers, from the lovely Steph, and Tara, and myself, say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.